Welcome to the Sage of Three Paths podcast. We are three brothers who use this space to talk about a range of topics, anything from politics, race, anime, and pop culture, each giving our own perspectives and opinions. I'm the youngest, Mo Janna, also known as Junior Lab.
I'm the oldest, Okello, but my brothers call me AJ.
Middle child, Oz, aka Wizard King.
We three brothers.
One sec. We once again thank you for tuning in and joining us on this sometimes cathartic journey. Let's dive right in.
I have a question for you guys. I know you're interviewing me, but as three strong black men, Mo has grown up with me, with my dad in the household, you know, and that grounding that I had from my dad continuously, you know, reiterating certain things with me. How did you guys maintain, because, you know, obviously you're not perfect, but you guys are very well mannered men, very intellectual, very creative, you know, and obviously the shout out to your mum, she is so wonderful to be able to manage that. But how did you navigate your manhood with not completely having the greatest relationship with your dad? Because I've had that luxury. How did you guys maintain that? Because I don't, for some people, I'd feel as though they would be more insubordinate in a sense, you know, a bit more rough around the edges. Obviously, like I said, you're not perfect, but Oz has always been a good role model to me personally. AJ, you've always been a good role model to me. Mo, you've been my best friend for years. So it's like, how have you guys kept your grounding? And where does that stem from? And you talk me through that.
From my perspective, I think we were quite fortunate that there were three of us. It was, perhaps in the truest essence, a self-sacrifice of our mother to make sure that we had a firm grounding. Now, man, raising kids ain't easy. And there's no handbook that says this is the perfect way to do it every time. So I feel she did the best of her capabilities, and I'll forever love and respect her for just her as well as that. But the fact that there were three of us, there was a lot of pressure put on AJ to be this pseudo father figure, if you know what I mean. But this ninja's like, 3 years older. So it's kind of like, we're into the same stuff, man. Like, where does that respect come from? But the grounding of our culture, the grounding of, if you step out of this, the guidelines of the matriarch, mum on top, then you could get beat. Stuff like that, already you almost put in your mind, there's so many paths you can go down, man. I don't want to ramble too much, but stuff's going to happen anyway. Really and truly, like, people are going to go and do crazy stuff. Like, I've been in some wild situations, quite dangerous, and I'm like, okay, I shouldn't be here. Like, me with my manner, with my upbringing, with my mother's self-sacrifice and all these things that I've mentioned before, I shouldn't be here. But yet the choices that I made led me to that point. So things are going to happen anyway. But the fact that there was three of us and each of us all had like this uncanny love for one another, regardless of what the other one would do, we would always have, subjectively, our best interest in heart. So I feel just through time, man, we've just supported each other, regardless of the ups, the downs. It's always been like, you cool? Something like that, for me anyway.
Yeah, I guess I don't know, I'll jump off and just, I guess just off the back of what you were saying, I was definitely, I feel, for me personally, just the cultural upbringing had a massive part to play in just feeling grounded. And this is something that I experienced, you know, recently going back to Sierra Leone and just seeing how life is there and interacting with the people there. It is very hierarchical. Hierarchical. Mm-hmm. I think yeah, I did that right.
Yeah, get the words, bro. I'm here for it.
So there is a lot of, there is a lot of hierarchy, man. And the thing that I love that we did, at, you know, within our house between us as brothers, you know, again, shout out to mom completely. She, you know, did an amazing job. But also she had to, you know, work. She had to study. She was really trying to make sure that although she made sacrifices, there were also sacrifices she had to make from a mother standpoint to make sure that she could create that foundation that really could, you know, we could feel that sense of, okay, we're safe. Okay, we're comfortable. Okay, you know, we can actually take this further, you know. And yeah, man, I actually loved growing up with these guys. As much as it was like ups and downs, a lot of that kind of hierarchy was kind of, we made fun out of it, you know. And to this day, if you ever catch us playing any games, like, there is that element and that energy still there. You know, we had something that we used to do, which is called the three headbands, right?
Two.
We had the headband system, right? So if we're playing any game, you have first headband, second headband, and third headband, right? If your first headband, you're basically top dog in the house. Mum's not around. You want someone to make you a sandwich, they're going to go make you that sandwich. No questions asked, right? No age involved. Mm. Again, we're all 90s babies, right? No age involved. This is our own system we implemented.
It's
right?
From Afro Samurai, the headbands.
Okay, yeah.
System. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's from Afro Samurai, yeah. And then you have the second headband. Second headband, basically third headband, you're like bottom of the food chain. Second headband, you can send the third person to do anything. Same thing. Make me a sandwich, you're going to get that sandwich. Third headband, it's peak. And basically, the way that it worked was, if you wanted to play the first headband, you have to have second headband. And you can only play that person once a day. If you want to go for second headband, that means your third headband, right? So you can only play one level up, and you only have one chance a day to play that person. So even something like that, we, you know, we had that hierarchy, but it was fun and games. We're doing this with like Street Fighter, fighting games, Mortal Kombat.
Capcom versus SNK 2.
You have to add the two to make sure it's the right game. But even stuff like that, that's something that we did, and it grounded us for real, man. It taught us, you know, actually that respect is there. Keeping your word, you know, certain things like, I'm sure there was a period where I was first headband, you know. I may have got my head mashed on the wall, but regardless... I had the, you know, I don't want to say the authority, but I had what came with that first headband. And I had that experience. It was very short-lived.
Respect my authority.
But I had that. And that was a lesson that I, you know, reflecting back, it was a lesson that I was learning. And, you know, I don't know whether it was AJ's idea who implemented that, but us doing those kind of activities as kind of like a unit, man, I don't know where I'd be if it wasn't for these two, for real.
Mm.
I guess on my side, that there was stuff that Oz said and there's stuff that Mo said, and I think it's multifaceted. First and foremost, of course, the shouts out go to the mother. And it's a case of, traditionally in our culture, the mother is the head of the household. The father goes out to work or whatever it is the father will do, and it's the mother that is the one who raises the kids. To the point where if your kids turn out bad, they only blame the mother. They don't blame the father.
Mm.
And that's just a general rule. So what tends to happen is mothers in our tradition tend to be really strict. I know there's other traditions that are like that. I've spoken to friends from different cultures and different parts of the world who have gone through very similar things, and they say their culture has a very similar system. But the mother gets a lot of the flack if the kids don't do well. So mothers tend to be incredibly strict for us. That they're the ones who enact discipline. And our mother was a traditional Sierra Leone woman. And, you know, shout out to my mum, because, you know, God willing, we get her on this podcast at some point. And it's only because she's refusing is the reason, because she's shy to get on radio. Let it not be, oh, you made an episode with your dad. No. Mum's shy for radio stuff. So that's the only reason. But my mum's story with, like, her father was an alcoholic. So my granddad, of course. And when he get drunk, he used to just batter the living daylights out of whoever he wanted to. So that sense of violence for discipline was instilled in my mum. You know, and it's not to speak bad about my granddad, because it was the culture that he grew up in.
That's like, yeah, ancestral. That's what they've been doing, so.
Yeah. So that had been instilled in my mother as normal. Like, you're supposed to beat your kids if they're not listening for discipline. And our mum was a traditional cultural woman in that sense for us. So there was that fear to do wrong. And as the eldest, my brothers, it's not just if I do wrong, it's also if my brothers do wrong, or if something happens to my brothers, you know, that they turn around and look at me and say, "Yo, what's good? You're the eldest. You're the one who's supposed to be making sure these guys are not smashing the house down, or making sure they're not getting hurt outside. What's good?" So there's an element of that. And that's not to say our mother didn't give us love. Of course, she gave us loads of love, tons of love. And I've got nothing but love for my mum. But that's one of the elements, the discipline. Now, our father, yes, and it's because I was the eldest, so I was old enough to have more memories of him. Like, Mo was quite young. I think, as you can still have good memories, Mo, mum and dad are already split up by then.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So you don't really remember, like, the bickering, the, like, raising the roof with the voices. Wow, gosh, it was, I hated it.
But I have memories of my dad being there.
Mm.
And even when my parents split up, and it's one thing I realized more as a man than when I was young going through it, but my dad did the best he could with his ability. Just the same as my mum, you know, like, she did the best that she could with her ability, given the times, given the situation. And it's unfortunate that, you know, that they couldn't continue to love each other in a way that they did when they were conceiving us or whatever. But that was the reality of the situation, and, you know, dad tried his best. So it wasn't like he wasn't there at all, because I have friends who, you know, I have this friend who's Greek. Well, he's part Greek, part Afghan. And he had asked me a question one time, which kind of like highlighted to me, like, oh no, my dad's there. It was something like, I forget the question, to be honest, but it was on the lines of, what does your father like, or what would you do if you, what would you say to your father in this situation? And the dude looks at me and goes, I have no idea what I'll say to him. I don't know the guy. And for me, it was a bit like, I know my dad. I know he's not perfect at all, but I know he's not perfect because I know my dad. So there was an element of that as well. And then there was an element of because decisions I had to made, and not just because, well, you know, I was worried that something would happen to them because it's what right to do, but because I did have that genuine love for them. And it's a love that's extended to you also, Emmanuel, even more so getting to know you. It's, sorry, I'm going on, forgive me. But it's a love where if I call you my brother, then I've truly laughed until I've, you know, my stomach hurts with you. I've truly ate well with you. I've truly starved with you. I've truly lived with you. And your existence in my life is something more valuable than money. Hmm. And I was able to develop that and have that with my brothers. So there's an element of what Mo was saying, like the headband systems. Man, we used to play trading card games. I'm so lucky I had my brothers to do that. I would have friends come over to our house just to play trading card games with me and my brothers, like Pokemon cards or Yu-Gi-Oh cards, I should say, or Duel Master cards. So, yeah, there was definitely an element of all that. And all these things come together to help keep a person grounded. And that's how it is for me. I hope that answers your question. I went on and on.
What was your preconceived notion, E-Man? Did you feel like each of us were going to be like, oh, it was so terribly hard. We couldn't make it, man, until we all, I don't know, found Jesus, bro. and then everything was right, man. Like, what? Obviously, I'm taking the piss, but what was your preconceived notion? Like, obviously, you didn't come with a completely empty cup. Rarely anyone does.
Truthfully, I didn't really have much of a preconceived notion. I'm just aware of the behind the scenes, but not knowing the true substance, you know. So I think I just really wanted to just
this guy comes in the house and looks around like, there's no pictures of a man in this house. It's just a woman and three boys.
No, because you know, you hear different stories about different people's situations. Like, my parents have been together for 30 plus years, you know. So I only can just hear different situations, but I also know there's two sides. Like, you got people like myself who can end up being off the rails with a good stable household than someone who has a single mum, and you know, they actually do very well for themselves and they're very stable. So I just wanted to hear just individually your perspectives of what
who enacted discipline in your house.
Both, man. Like, for a period of time, actually, I don't think Mom knows this. When I lived in America, my dad, so my mum's side of the family are American. So my grandma actually lives in New York. She's Jamaican, but yeah, my aunties, my uncle, my cousins, they all live in New York, Brooklyn. My mum, and then the other side of my mum's family, they also live in like Fort Lauderdale, like near Miami sides. So, and on my dad's side are in London, Wembley. So basically, when I was six, my mum always dreamed to live in America, so it was time for us to do that. Immigration stopped my father, didn't let him go. So he had to see us off, and we all went. Dad stayed in the UK.
Wow.
Worked, sent us letters. And this is how I got put onto my musical upbringing, because it was just me and my sister and my brother in Florida, and my dad sent a CD, like a lover's CD, you know. It was like Marvin Gaye on there, Luther Vandross, like Diana Ross, like, do you know what I'm saying? So I got put onto that R&B early, soul early. But anyways, I digress. So it was mum was the dad as well for a good 1.5 years maybe, and until my dad eventually came over with us. So yeah, my mum was playing both roles. She was cutting our hair, she was whipping us, she was loving on us. So you know, and I didn't have a good connection with my dad. It took me a long time to build the version of what Mo saw, you know. My dad's, you know, very close to us, and you know, has his hand very effectively on our lives. I resented my dad for years, because I felt like you weren't around. But I didn't know why he wasn't around, you know?
It's the not knowing.
Do you get what I'm saying? So when you start to know adulthood, you start to really appreciate and like you said, it's like, so I do and I don't agree with this statement where, you know, they say everyone's doing the best that they can. I hear you, but sometimes I don't think everyone is. I feel like some people, they just don't care. They're just doing their thing and they don't care who they hurt or whatnot. But
you got to understand that at that point in time, that is the best they got.
Yes.
It doesn't mean they can't be better.
You're right, yeah, they are incapable of doing more than they can in that moment.
At that point in time. Yeah, you're right. And, you know, it's as you said, depression is something that comes and goes. Yeah. People's best, the bar shifts throughout their lives.
That is very true, yeah. So even within that, I'm learning to have more compassion and kindness for people's wrongdoings. And because, you know, we're not perfect. So my dad always tells me, you will not be able to see me, but the people won't be able to see me. But when you point a finger, 3 is always pointing back at you, you know? So growing up, when I, you know, now when I point a finger, it's like before I point blame on anyone, I say, well, what am I doing? Where am I at? Have I been that person? Have I done other things different that I've hurt people in a similar way? So I always, you know, always look to reflect and before I try to put blame on anyone else or point fingers. But so really and truly, I kind of had that understanding as well of the dad not being present. And it took me a while to truly reason and understand my dad. And it took a long time to even grow up to be able to have a conversation with my dad. So that was basically just what it was. And I know your dad, do you know what I'm saying? So he's always been lovely to me and I've always had a great vibe with your dad. Always treats him like his own son. Every time I'm there, he just wants to give me food and just show love. And I remember him driving me around, blazing all the biggest tunes. Like, just he's always been a cool dad to me. So
those random mixes,
bro, for days.
You don't remember burning CDs? For
days.
If it was the coolest cat in town, because he was burning CDs.
My man, always had a different car. Like. You know what I'm saying? Always was giving us clothes, always had aftershave, bare aftershave, do you know what I'm saying? So for me, he was just the coolest uncle ever, like, do you know what I'm saying? So I just never knew. And then from your mum's point of view, you know what I'm saying, I saw her a lot, but I always saw her working. All I know of your mum is to work. Provider. Do you know what I'm saying? And that's all I really know. So 100%. I don't really know the nucleus completely. I've seen you guys in passing. I've seen Osman dip in and out. I've seen AJ being this unicorn of a brother that I've not met yet, but eventually I end up now meeting. And you're a whole grown man that's done bare things and you have a child and it's like, whoa, do you know what I'm saying? But I don't really know. And then I know Mo to never show no emotion and always be independent and always get things done and so well educated but so well mannered, but also there's this part of him that he hasn't even tapped into that, you know what I'm saying, eventually transpired years later. And you know what I'm saying, so I just know ins and outs, but I've never really truly, you know, delve in. So that's kind of
the origin, really. that's what it was missing. It was the origin.
Welcome to the Sage of Three Parks podcast. We are three brothers who use this space to talk about a range of topics. Anything from politics, race, anime, and pop culture. Each giving our own perspectives and opinions. I'm the youngest, Mo Janna, also known as Junior Lab.
I'm the oldest, Okello, but my brothers call me AJ.
Middle child, Oz, aka Wizard King.
No, sorry, I wanted to touch on something just because, I mean, I'm learning a lot in this conversation, but one thing that really stood out to me and I thought was really interesting, and I really want to get onto this because I feel like we've got a lot that we could probably talk about. But you talking about, you know, when you was in the States, your dad had to stay behind, and one thing that he did was write letters, and he sent you a CD with some classics on them. Obviously, at the time, that probably wasn't really the popular music to listen to. But how has that shaped you in what you do right now?
Amazing. What do you do right
amazing
now?
Amazing question. So, I'm a touring drummer, composer, artist, music director. I also have when I was in uni, I started getting to a studio, and didn't really know what the fascination was, but I was always recording like drum loops, and I became known as a guy who has drum loops. And then years later, I now have my drum loops on, you know, GarageBand. You know, there's I've got loops on GarageBand now, which is crazy. So yeah, that as well, and also now an artist learning to produce and write music and stuff myself. So I think, and to answer your question, Mo, I've always understood the feeling, you know. I haven't always known the technicalities behind the music sometimes, but I've always felt something. I've always understood what feels good, you know? And I never, and it's crazy because someone said this to me the other day, and it's actually a blessing to understand what feels good in music, because some people just listen to the radio and they just listen to what's given to them. But to actually seek and know, to find classic music and music that has substance and is timeless, to know the difference and have an eclectic taste and style of music. Not everyone has that ear. That's actually kind of superhuman. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that's actually a gift to be able to differentiate that. So I think from a young age, you know, hearing that music, the soul, the passion, the love, it definitely made me a young lover boy. But it also made me understand quality music and understand music with meaning and message and passion. And I resonate to it so much. And it's crazy because...
Emmanuel, sorry. I just want to say how the music made you into a lover boy. I was having a conversation with Mo and my mum recently. And Mo, perhaps you remember the conversation more than I do. I'm a tired dad brain out here. But it was on the lines of, would you sleep with a married woman or a woman who has a man already? That's a question to you, Emmanuel.
Wow.
And also.
Oh, segue. Segue to segue.
It's related. It's related. Wow. You'll see. It's related.
That's a slip aside.
I'm not going to lie to you guys. I do have a fascination for things that, in that sexual realm, doing things I shouldn't. That is actually a kink of mine, where I do like to do things that I shouldn't be doing. So
this guy's talking about that cuckold. He wants to be the cook.
So technically, yes, it does fascinate me. And it's not good. It's not good because I've made a lot of bad decisions within that over the years. But due to morals, I want to say no, but the freak in me.
Yeah.
My mind's telling me no.
But I'm not it. The freak in me, ain't gonna lie to nobody. The freak in me does not mind. I don't mind. But
it doesn't see anything wrong with a little bump and grind with a married woman.
I mean, if she checked out, she wouldn't be doing that. Do you know what I'm saying?
you give me all these excuses now.
Yeah, that's awful.
But yeah.
Oh wait. So Osman, how about you?
Before you point the finger, there's three pointing back at you, bro.
I appreciate it.
For me, unless it's a discussion with an open relationship or something like that, and all parties are notified, I'm out. I don't want to, like, the stress and anxiety, which is something that I suffer with even still now, senses of, bouts of anxiety, that's too much for me to handle. Like we'll get caught. I get it. Like, that can be exciting for some people, but for me, no, man, I'm all the way.
To be fair, I do hear you. To be honest, for me, I would like it.
Genuine conversation, open relationship.
Yeah.
Come on.
I'd like it to be verbalized.
I don't believe you for a second, man.
No.
You don't see nothing wrong.
No. Hear me. No, honestly.
I'm sure part of it you said is when you is something that you shouldn't
right,
be doing.
Right. No, but in a sense, obviously, you Mo knows me. I haven't had sex in 4 years now, so I actually don't have a desire to have sex with multiple people.
By choice,
yeah. I used to be...
You sure?
Yeah, I used to be a...
this guy's a drummer for the O2 arena, 20,000 people. Knickers on
that's
stage.
That's how we can drum so well.
Yeah, I'm sexual transmutation, yeah. Think and grow rich. That is definitely a big part of it. But, open relationship vibes, definitely I'd like both parties to be aware. Because it's, like I said, back to the morals part of it, it's not actually healthy to do that for anyone.
And obviously, if you're partaking in some cuckold scene, everyone needs to know what's going on. I get you, man.
100%.
I get you.
But yeah, where are you going with this?
Right. So I was having the conversation with Mo and my mum about sleeping with a married woman or whatever like that. And I said, yeah, I would. And my mum and Mo were both like, oh, that's so terrible. Why would you do that? I was like, do you know why I even learned to do that type of thing? My mum goes, what? I was like, Joe. My mum goes, what, Joe the music? I was like, yeah. She goes, I was playing the music so you can enjoy it, not so you can get lessons about sleeping with married parents.
See? Program.
No, that's true, though. And that's big facts, because this is obviously something that happened a lot later in life, but we used to listen to all of those, you know, Joe, LL Cool J, Usher.
If you don't treat your woman like a lady, then someone's going to take her.
Like that.
You see what's old to you.
It's
like brand new to the next man. If you don't do for her.
Sing it, boy.
Do you find somebody else who can?
Do bad.
If you don't want to lose out on the best thing you ever had, you better take it from me, or you end up just a lonely man.
But that's real talk, though.
So as you say, being able to listen to lyrics, I found, has been a joy in life. I love being able to hear what someone has to say, especially if it is thought-provoking or it's a lesson or a story. I love it. But it's definitely going to influence you if you surround yourself around a certain type of music and vibe.
Yeah, I feel like I'm definitely, because of that, I have been single for a while now, and I do feel like I actually connect with older women. So the past three women that I've...
Did you say odd women?
Older. Well, to be fair, from Mo knows, from young I've been connecting to older women. I make a call and one out.
She needs to have a Zimmer frame. I see you, my guy.
Nah, do you know what? This is...
I know.
I've been connecting to old women, like, more than my own age. And I think I'm definitely an old soul. But because of, you know, the early programming I had from those love of tunes, man.
Listen to the Marvin Gaye's.
Definitely in the wrong era, for sure. Luther Vandross had me.
You want to be born in the 70s.
Yeah, I definitely should have been born in the
working 70s. In the dregs of the coal mine.
So let's not forget, I did interrupt Emmanuel. He was talking about his father sending the music and how that influenced him to get into music. I just digress with the whole music influencing.
Yeah, I think I kind of landed, though.
Do you know what? One thing that came to my mind when you said Loverboy was this image of you with a shirt that's too big for you, baggy jeans, a diamond earring. You had that and that buzz cut in your eyebrow.
And he licked his lips and rubbed his hands to go.
Actually, you do.
You know what I'm saying? Definitely. That definitely was a
nice.
No, that definitely was a big part of my life at the time, for sure. Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah.
But come on, give us this music
all
journey.
All clowning aside, let's hear the journey, man. I know that we've had so many conversations about your experience, and actually it's a blessing to be able to have somebody who has this insight and is in the room with
because you've won awards, you know, right?
I would
like BAFTA awards and stuff like that.
No, not me. Sims. I think Sims was on the Brit. Yeah.
The Brit Awards. Yeah, yeah. You've been in the room like with what I would say is musical legends, right? Not just artists. And I know that you guys don't like Thundercat.
No,
I'm not going to make that reference to Thundercat.
I think Thundercat is Thundercat.
Incredible.
I think it's a bassist.
It's an incredible bassist.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's it.
AJ described it the best way. That some of the songs, if it's just a bass solo, was it R2-D2 on drums? All right, bro. Like, I think it's incredible.
But yeah.
I couldn't hold a candle to him even if I practiced for 1,000 years. That's just what he has that built within him to produce that sound. Time and a place.
But yeah, man, I just to kind of hone it back, I know that we've had some conversations and, you know, some of the experiences you've had to go, like, this is an opportunity for aspiring, you know, people that want to work or be within music or the music industry. Like, some of the stuff that we've been able to chop up and speak about, like, I would not be able to have this conversation with anybody else that I know.
I mean, just soaking it in. My goodness.
Oh, so wait. So we'll...
Trump. I just stands there soaking it in.
I didn't know where we landed. I thought I was waiting to hear the land. What was the landing point?
What's it like, bro? You're playing at the O2 arena where there's 20,000. What is that like? What goes into that? How did you get there? What's the story?
We've come
bro?
Through and we've spoken about origin, we've spoken about talking to girls late at night, eating
your
food,
basketball career came down.
Basketball, yeah. Then
you've now reinvented yourself to be some musician, drummer,
okay,
in front of 20,000 people.
Okay. So
it's a quick jump.
From young, I've always been fascinated with music. Like, my parents said, what's the word? Cliche, not to be cliche, but I was beating on pots and pans as a child. And I just remember in school, I was always beating like with on the table with pens. I just always had rhythm in me from young. And obviously from church is a big part of my life, as you guys know, my dad being a pastor. We always ended up going to churches that were very small in number, never mega churches. So my brother, you know, as you guys know, producer, he, to be honest, I haven't really given him the mention that he deserves. My brother, Matty Rich, he has been the biggest influence in my life. Like, I've seen everything from him. Like, he had older girls before me. He was the musician. He played the drums. He was the basketball player. Like, he is literally me, you know. Obviously, I've grown into my own self, but yeah. But I've seen my brother do everything, man. Such a dedicated, talented, amazing, tremendous man. And you know, I used to have to hide and try and be around them because we have like a 7 age. What's the age gap between you and us?
I think there's three, four years, like five, seven age gap.
So, and to my sister, obviously, like 9 or something like that. So I used to have to run and hide to be around them, you know. So I was always by myself. But one thing that kept us together was or aligned us was music. You know, my brother would let me, you know, write, and we had like a little rap group. We had like a little a gospel rap group. Yeah, it was called Young Rich. And I used to write gospel raps. And I remember we went to this church one time. This guy took us to some church, maybe a 3-hour drive away, and we performed. We used to perform in our local church. My brother used to play the drums at church, and then so there was a hierarchy with the musicians in church. Obviously, the pastor's son used to play the drums, and then there's my brother, and then I could just play whenever I could. And I used to get kicked off the drum kit all the time. And when guest drummers used to come, I used to sit behind, you know, them playing behind the seat and just watch and just take it in. So I was always surrounded by music, always loved it. But, you know, sport was always my thing. I played American football, played soccer, I played basketball growing up, and that was, you know, what I always wanted to do. I wanted to be an athlete, and my brother was always saying, you can do both. Why don't you just do music and, you know, sports? And I just, never listened. So growing up playing in church, and one thing I learned to do, guys, I learned to worship. That was my form of music for me. You know, that was my introduction to music, like a form of giving reverence to God, aligning spiritually to God. That was my introduction to music, you know? So funny enough, there was a story one day when I was playing the drums, and one of the people in the church said that they seen like angels around me when I was playing, and I never thought that story. And then I guess maybe from...
We should call this guy Lightning Dog.
What is that?
Thundercat Lightning Dog.
Oh, God. Word...
I can't believe it. God. I can't
word play.
I love a call. I like that, though.
Okay.
I like quick that, with it. Dog. That's cool. Anyways, so I guess music's always kind of been there, but I've always wanted to be a professional basketball player. I always wanted to go to the NBA. That was the biggest aspiration. And then... when I started to, in high school, I remember going and just, it was always fun to me, like around when I met Mo, I was always just doing it. It was always just something that I just could do, and that was just fun. And I remember one day I actually drummed in an assembly at school, in high school. When you think back about it, like, I never thought I'd be a professional drummer now when I was doing an assembly in school. I don't even know why I even did that. It was just for fun. Kept playing in church throughout the years. I remember when I got my first drum gig, which was actually by, God may his soul rest in love, Depot's big sister, Abiola. I remember the time when I was like putting like drum videos on Instagram and some of my basketball workout videos. And then she messaged me and was like, "Hey, can you do a gig in Southampton?" And I was like, "Okay, yeah, sure." She was like, "I'll pay for your travel." And I was like, "Oh, okay, cool." She was like, "Oh, I'm also going to pay you for the gig too." And I was like, "Oh." And like, it was an electric drum kit at some church, but I was like, "You can get paid to drum? That's a thing?" Like, I had no idea. So that kind of opened my world up to say,
better than the £80.
Yeah, exactly. Right? I think I got like, I don't know, like £100 or something. And I think like my world opened up to like, whoa, I didn't know you can get paid to just play drums. That's insane. So around the time, like, I was traveling, I was, like I said, mentioned, I was doing art. And then when May His Soul Rest in Love, when Anthony passed, I would just go and practice drums. That was the only thing I would do. Like, the Loughborough University, I literally lived right next to Loughborough University. And where the church we went to, the university students would worship at the EHB, which is like the spiritual, you guys went to uni, innit? So you know there's always like a spiritual center in the uni. So they had drums there. I would go and practice like nonstop. I'd be just playing, falling asleep on the kit, like staying until like 4 a.m. like just, and I kept my same for ages. I didn't know why. I was mad at God, because I was like, why did you let me go do basketball to just, you know, just be nothing? And I felt like I was a failure, and I didn't understand why I spent my life, a big chunk of my life, dedicated to basketball. I had no, and I didn't understand. And now I know I had to learn work ethic. There's not one thing you can't take from me. I'll work my butt off, and I'll outwork people, and I will work tirelessly, no days off. And I learned that from basketball. So I put that same thing into my music, and I think that's why I've been able to progress the way I've progressed, because of my mentality of no days off. You know, always, if when someone's sleeping, you can be working, you know what I'm saying? So that was just my mentality. And I started meditating and just trying to like channel in what I wanted to do. I actually wanted to be a massage therapist, so I was gonna go to Loughborough College and take on a massage therapy course. And I was battling between the two, of being
mature women only.
Basically, I was battling between
catch him at the retirement home.
I was battling between the two of, you know, do I pursue, you know, the massage therapy side, or do I do the whole music thing? And with music, I didn't want to, because at the time I wasn't even, I was drumming, but I wanted to actually just like record. I wanted to be a recording artist, because as Mo knows, I was making house tunes, I was rapping. And I love writing, so I was more pursuing that lane. But I didn't want to move somewhere like London and work a job and then pursue music. That didn't appeal to me at all. So I was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go to uni, build connections, and then my plan is not to finish uni. My plan is to go on tour and make it before I finish uni. That was my thought process. So I went to go apply at the Loughborough College, because I just... the music thing, I just felt there was no more spaces left. Forced my hand. But when I was working at the Royal National Institute of the Blind, RNIB, I started working with people who had autism, Down syndrome, Asperger's, and I was open to a different world of working with people who were disadvantaged. And it really opened my mind up, because one thing that they all had in common was they all walk around with their headphones, and some of them didn't like to communicate, didn't want to communicate, didn't know how to communicate. But one thing that they all were aligned with was that whenever they felt like they couldn't cope or, you know, needed to get away, they'd play their music. And there was one thing that they all found enjoyment in. And I was like, wow, this music thing's powerful, you know. There was even a guy who was on like a Stephen Hawking's, like the Stephen Hawking's chair. And what's that, cerebral palsy?
You call it a Stephen Hawking's chair.
Why are you not busting up?
Nah.
Nah, why are you not busting up?
It's just a, it's just a reference that you used.
What's that called? You look crazy. You look crazy. You look crazy. What's it called? Cerebral palsy. Cerebral palsy. No, it's not. It's not cerebral palsy, is it? Yeah. It's something.
No, I'm sure it is.
Stephen Hawking's disease.
I believe it. That's what Stephen right. Hawking's,
okay, that, Hawking's disease.
Basically, there was like a.
He had Stephen Hawking's disease.
From sitting in his Stephen Hawking's chair.
Nah. Anyways, so there was a talent show, music thing, and he was dancing around on the chair, like going back and forward in that. And I was like, right, nice. He's getting involved. And I was like, man, this music thing's serious. And then I got introduced to music therapy. Had no idea what this was, but I understand that this is what made me cope when I was had my depression. I got introduced to Neo Soul, so I started listening to Robert Glasper and Leila Hathaway, Erykah Badu, 2016.
Mm.
So I realized that, like, man, this music thing is like, it's serious, you know, and obviously gospel music. So my plan was to make the same music that helped me get through my depression and helped me cope. I wanted to add to that world and just create. So I went to uni, and I was grinding, man, and I heard a J. Cole bar, and She Gone Pop. He was like, if niggas put half of the time they put into chasing ass, into chasing a craft, right now they'd be famous and rich. And that hit me, you know, and it just made me realize that, man, my mom always used to tell me, why are you on the phone with these girls? You're not making no money doing that. Your friends ain't making you money. And I used to be like, mom, like, go away, whatever. And it's true. Like, we're here chatting, laying up on the phone, and bank account is tired. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I started to understand, like, the time and energy part of things. So when I got to uni, when all my friends were partying, going out, clubbing, I was grinding, going hard, practicing, working on my craft, even to the point where one day I got locked in my uni because they didn't know I was there. And I started being known as a workhorse in my uni. So even though my attendance got poor, because I started doing gigs and started networking a lot and starting to venture off into London and create more different people like Children of Zeus, Misha B, Tomish, FKJ, people I was starting to meet, and, you know, even musicians that I looked up to. So one of my favourite musicians, Spanky McCurdy, who played in one of my favourite gospel groups, Ty Tribbett, and the GA. He also played with Lauryn Hill. He also played with P. Diddy, like Jill Scott. I set up a masterclass for him, a pre-show Lauryn Hill jam, just off reaching out, and my uni helped fund it. Things like that. I set up a masterclass for Rico Nichols. Mo came to that. Funny story about that.
What's a masterclass? What's
so basically, kind of like a TED talk, but think about it for like musicians. So I would get their, whole rig. So I'd hire in whatever they needed for their drums, all their equipment, and then they would play their music from tour. So for example, Drake's drummer, I did one with him. He played like some Drake records that he played, and he also played with Daniel Caesar, so he played like Daniel Caesar songs. Rico did the same thing. Rico actually didn't play any Kendrick songs, he just played different stuff. But yeah, I was able to set that up. I set up private lessons with Brian Fraser Moore, who is Justin Timberlake's drummer, played with Aaliyah. Crazy repertoire of people. But one thing why I started understanding the importance of me doing that as a creative entrepreneur was I knew that I was disadvantaged by coming into music so late. So I was like, how can I fast track myself and learn quicker? Mentorship. So with me creating opportunities for these people, I was able to have candid conversations in rooms, just me and them, learning about the game. I was reaching out to people, and as I was adding value, I was creating opportunities for myself to go backstage, to see shows, to get a taste of the life that I'm now living, you know? And it's crazy because they saw something in me, just a hungry young budding musician, you know? They didn't have to do this stuff, you know? Now I'm able to pay the same thing forward to people that want to be in my shoes, you know? So, yeah, that's kind of like the trajectory. But I used to go to gigs when I was living in Manchester, to London, to go help, like for example, my friend Yusuf Days. I used to go help him set up his kit, and I just reached out to him, and then he was like, yeah, sure, come do it. But I used to sleep in the hotel room because I had nowhere to stay, but just for the sake of going to network, I went down there, no money to pay for a hotel, but I'd just sleep in the lobby. It's like the things I was willing to do to reach success, you know. I would sneak into, you know the internet, the band, the internet with Sid. Mm-hmm. I figured out that like, if you act like you're a part of the crew, you can get in for free. I didn't have money to go in. It was sold out. So I took my snare case and walked in at the back entrance and said I was a part of the band just to go and watch. I'm walking around backstage by myself, just taking in the vibes, taking in the energy, and just realising what it takes to get around. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I kind of love that. You know?
Do you know what I'm saying, bro? Like, and one of my friends, he taught me things like this as well. He had a drink company, and he was like, you know, how am I going to get my stuff in stores? How am I going to make it? He lied and would call up Holland and Barrett, make up a name, and say, yeah, so-and-so, Jim told me to give you a call. And he'd wag a meeting somehow, you know, and knock the door down and got his drink in stores. And it just taught me, what are you willing to do to get to where you need to go? You know, how far are you willing to go? Not in the sense of, you know, going against yourself in the sense of your integrity and your pride, but in a sense of like, put your ego aside and hustle and put the work in and be savvy, network with who you need to connect to, meet who you need to go through, sacrifice hanging out with your friends, sacrifice girls, sacrifice luxury. I remember when I was in uni and I was eating noodles, bro, like, you know what I'm saying? I was struggling. But just because I wanted to save money to pay for equipment, you know, or to like save money to travel, to go to places musically. So yeah, that was my mindset in university, and it definitely paid off because I was able to get myself in situations where, for example, I'm going on tour with Children of Zeus and as a DJ, and I'm not a DJ, but they just wanted me around because of my energy. You know what I'm saying? And just because I was a nice guy, because I was hungry and because I was due diligent, you know. Fast forward to working with Misha B, never worked with an artist that big, never received money like that. I think, I don't know what I was getting, but it was the most money I've ever got at the time. And I didn't feel like I was good enough for it, you know? I had serious imposter syndrome, but I just threw myself in, you know? And I always throw myself into situations. Fast forward to Little Sims. I did a GoFundMe for my drum kit. Didn't have the kit to go into rehearsals. Serious imposter syndrome. I nearly quit thousands of times. Mo knows, like, the behind the scenes of me going through it. Like, constant mini deaths. You know, it's really, really hard.
What a way to put it.
Really, really hard, man. Being torn down to get pulled back up. Just being a part of that level of production. You know, being with an artist who's very meticulous and knows every detail, so you have no room to slack or not be on it. The continual push for excellence from music director, tour manager, to the artist, you know, it's a lot of pressure. And I'm the drummer, so it's a lot. I carry the band, you know, I'm the heartbeat. So I didn't realize what that took. I didn't realize. A lot of people ask for a lot of things, but when you then get it, you don't know what comes with it, you know? So I had to really walk in and I went from being in a room and being the last person and you know, just getting in the room to owning the room, you know, to it now being my room, and we now have other people coming into our space, and I'm a part of creating this energy. So yeah, man, I've definitely fast tracked and I've definitely learned.
Do you say to the security, nobody gets in unless they give you a code, a password? I don't care if they're carrying guitar or bongos.
Yeah, nah, it's the security definitely is very, very tight. So our security is actually the same security that does Gorillaz, which is crazy, you know. So yeah, they're very, very on it. I think one of the other security, he does like gigs, and so we have a nuance of like someone who's a lot more streetwise and a lot more like arena heavy, you know, superstar security. So yeah, that's just an answer to that. So yeah, I'm able to experience so much different sides, from seeing people like Rich Day Two and being an OG to go into a party and he's there and we're chopping it up and he's like, yo, I'm like, yo. He's like, yo, I've seen, you're dope. And I'm like, you're a legend. Like, you've influenced me so much and my friends. Like, thank you, you know? To just chilling with him and vibing with him, catching energies, and then seeing this 6'7" black guy in a tracksuit and it's Stormzy and he's just in the space and it's normal. And this is our party, this is Sim's party, and it's like, you know, when you go into a room and you're trying to find your feet and you're trying to, you know, find how you fit into the room. There is none of that. I'm the most comfortable in the room because I'm with my people and everyone else is having that experience. So to be in the industry but yet still have like a family unit and to not have the crazy level of imposter syndrome because people are helping build you and push you and propel you. That I'm very blessed and fortunate in my situation because I'm able to reap a lot of fruits that many people may not experience due to the grounded people that I have on this team, you know? So yeah, it is very challenging. And I'll get into why it's so challenging more, but just as a basis, it's very challenging but very rewarding. The fact that I get to share vibrations for a living, the fact that I'm in a position where I no longer have to just like take gigs just to make a living, I now have a luxury of a choice, the power of choice to say I don't want to creatively do this, and not have to sacrifice my creative integrity for a paycheck. That's a blessing, because I once did that. You know, I went from doing studio sessions from £10 to £1,000. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's like it's been a slow process, a slow progress. But I'm very grateful for where I am, and yeah, it's only the beginning, which is crazy. But within that, I've realized that this industry doesn't align with who I am as a person. It's built off ego. It's built off, look at me, showy, showy. I'm not on social media, so I'm not a part of this fallacy, this facade. I'm trying to find my own way, you know, a way that's a lot more grounding and sufficient, that breeds longevity, that breeds good mental health. But it's very hard, man. Very hard being in this industry where it's driven by so much negativity and so much like power tripping. And truthfully, I've been very protective and focused, I'm not gonna lie, because obviously I'm very studious, so I study a lot. I listen to a lot of people's stories and documentaries, and I hear a lot of things. So it's like a part, and I'm around people that are seasoned. I'm around people that have been touring for years, so they are also quite protective of me, and you know, so I'm not like having space. I'm not having the young and dumb early stages of craziness. I'm having a more seasoned touring experience. Where,
well, you said at the beginning that you started quite late in this whole music thing, so you're already coming with this maturity from the get-go, you would hope.
Yeah, so my experience is very different, and in opposed to like the you know, the crew that I'm with now, like Sims finishes the show and she goes to her room, like she goes to her hotel or she goes to the bus. You know what I'm saying? Obviously we do party from now and then, every now and then, but like that's the culture.
So I want to just say two things. One, I stand corrected. It was ALS that...
I knew it was something different. Yeah, cerebral palsy is just a face.
It was ALS, a lot more extreme, yeah. It wasn't. I'm not going to attempt to
Something scoliosis. But
another thing that...
No? Yeah.
I'm gonna leave. Right. I'm gonna leave
you out. Definition.
Because if I attempt to give a lamb definition, I'm just gonna say ALS. And second point, and this is something that I really kind of wanted to touch back on, is the work ethic that you were saying that you really had to put when you was, you know, trying to make your own way into the game. It's something that, you know, a good friend of mine, both of them, twins, Brad and Miles, they own their own digital marketing agency. And even the way that they came into their industry with their business was, and this is, I love the way they say it, is they kicked down the side door. And, you know, something that you said a lot earlier really resonates with that, with, you know, actually you was trying to live life by your own means, not by what, you know, somebody has said, this is the way that you need to
create their industry. Own opportunities. This is the way.
Yeah, and you are doing that by living your own truth. So if it takes, you know, you having to sneak in and get into a gig by saying, oh, I'm part of the band, and, you know, maybe you got to do a couple of things with a couple of things, sticks, I don't know. That is a story for you to keep to yourself. But even seeing that, it just goes 100%, man. And it's something that I've, you know, started coming into a lot more now, which is, and I always just keep, I love to learn and just question things. And I always question, like, who actually made these rules, and who were those rules designed for? Like, expectation. Who set that expectation, and why should we be following those specific expectations? That's basically your life being dictated to you. You have to take these steps. You need to do this. And really kind of questioning and taking it back and really resonating with, you know, what does your gut say? What is your, like, deep soul saying? How can you break out this path, or how can you follow your own path in that specific way? And definitely I can see from, you know, early days of basketball, the work ethic and how you've now translated that into what you're doing. But even, you know, the same, you had the same mindset back then. And I think that is, you know, just to loop it back, the one thing that I feel like I learned from you is, actually, I don't have to do or be the conventional way. Unconventional is way better, because actually that's me following the way that I want to do it, using my own brain, my own intuition and my own gut, rather than following a bunch of rules to end up at a destination.
You're right. I've always been a rule breaker, man. I've always been someone who, if everyone's wearing orange, I'm going to wear red. If everyone's walking in a straight line, I'm going to walk in zigzag. Like, doing what everyone else does never resonated with me.
If everybody going to take the vaccine,
you know what I'm saying? Like, it never resonated with me. So I feel like, it's just about being yourself and just being different and not being afraid to be different. I was always scrutinized for being different and why are you doing this or why, you know? And I think I definitely want to promote more individuality. We're not taught to be individuals. We're not taught to be creative. We're not taught to think independently. And that's something that I definitely want to pass on and allow people to understand their greatness and their uniqueness, and follow your own path. What works for me may not work for you. My path is not your path. My mindset is not your mindset, you know? And so that's why I love Ye so much. Like Kanye, he's a pioneer for just doing things differently and being yourself and forget what people say about it. Just, you have to just trust you, because at the end of the day, in your darkest moments, it's just you have to live with. When you lay your head down at night, you got to live with yourself, man. So whatever you decide to do, you've got to own that. So that's kind of like where I'm at, you know.
So a question that I have, how did you, or how has it been transitioning from you being in that space where, you know, you can really make your own decisions and do things your own way, to coming into an environment where, again, you are with legends, right? And they have a playbook. As much as it's a creative space, there's certain things that need to be done to reach that level of excellence, right? And in order for you to have to do that, you have to follow these steps. How has it been you having to transition from almost being free with all the choices that you can make to being in a state where it's like, I can't necessarily make all these choices? Example, I've seen you play free, like just playing the drums free, and I completely see you like playing in a completely different way when you're doing a show in a band for a specific artist. You know, that for me, I can see the differentiation. I'm like, okay, this person's playing regulated basketball versus the street basketball. You know, I can see that within the music. How is that transition, you coming into it being a free player to actually having to play for a specific song which has a specific beat tempo? You have to hit this accurate every time.
Yeah, it's very challenging, man. And I've been on this journey of is this what I want to do? Because of that reason, I'm very expressive, I'm a free spirit, and I don't like to be contained or confined, you know. I've learned a lot about discipline. Doing the same thing over and over again in the sense of consistency is very important, especially when it comes to like nerves. So when you're doing things like the O2 or big shows in big arenas,
park life, man, festivals, how many people are there?
So well, when 20, you're doing 000. Things like that, if your nerves, you know, or if you're having a bad day, or if your mind's not there, when you're in muscle memory, your body's just in dry. Like I've blacked out on shows where I'm just, my body's just going, my mind just like wanders off, and I'm like, oh shoot, I'm actually here playing the show in front of all these people. It's crazy, but my body's just still going because I've done it so much times. So I think the muscle memory of it is very important, because it carries you through. You can go through a show, a huge show that means a lot, and go through the motions and, you know, get through it and still not completely be present, which isn't the ideal. You want to be present, you want to be there, you want to take in the moment, but it allows you to kind of like free your mind to be elsewhere, and your body still goes. So I understand that aspect of it, which is good. And for like TV, for example, when you do TV performances and stuff, you do many different takes. So when we did that Jules Holland, when we did Jimmy Fallon and Tiny Desk, Tiny Desk was a one shot, to be fair, but yeah, the TV shows, you have to do many different takes of different angles and stuff, but you have to do the same feels, the same movements, because if they sync an audio, say audio 3, take 3 to take 5 visually, and you did a different thing, it won't match up. I've learned the hard way in one of my recordings for Jules Holland. You can see that I hit a tom in the wrong place on a different section because they used a different take. That doesn't go to my favor. It's because Sims maybe wanted that take. And Jim says, I've always got to make sure I'm on it. So for those purposes, it, you know, it's important to be on point. But yeah, it is very hard, man. I battle with this all the time, man. I'm not going to lie. I don't know how long I'll be in this situation, because it's not completely me. You're right. I am, for now, serving. I'm learning. I'm being extremely humble. In order to lead, you have to learn to follow. So that's kind of the phase I'm at in my life, which is very humbling, very challenging. But yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Okay, so I'm going to say, as it's getting late, we'll come to an end. But there was, I guess, three questions which I want to fire off at you. Hopefully they'll be quick succession questions. The first, are you willing to, for young adults or for anyone listening to this who could potentially be inspired financially to go down the path of a musical instrument for a career, as you were surprised that you could get paid for it, would you be willing to say a figure that you have been paid that could inspire listeners? That's the first question.
Yeah, sure. I'm very candid about my experience. I'm doing a masterclass on the 8th, and I actually am going to go through my actual finances and budgeting so they actually get an understanding. Because a lot of people, you may see me doing certain things and you may have this perception of, oh yeah, he must be rolling, or I used to have that same perception, you know. So just to be super candid, for our shows we do, I get 300 a show, and then for rehearsals I get 200 per rehearsal. So as you can imagine, that is a lot, in a sense of the average person probably makes that in like a week. So what I would make from 5 shows, couple of rehearsals, I can make in a week. The average person makes at work 9 to 5, and that in a month. So it is obviously very fast money. However, it's not always sustainable, because that's not guaranteed. When shows get cancelled, that money doesn't appear. It's not guaranteed. For example, if the artist that you're working with doesn't go out on the show, something happens, you don't get paid. You know what I'm saying? Say if something happens to me, I don't get paid. So it's not always guaranteed. And as well, like, just for example, take like the pandemic, for example. Like, we had all those shows lined up for whatever happens. Those shows didn't happen. Now I've got to think about my different avenues. So yeah, and the most money I've ever got at once was when I did the Apple drum loops. I got $1,000 for a day, for a few hours. That was the most money I think I got at once. After my tour, which was like 16 dates, got $4,000 for like less than a month. That was cool. But yeah, this is perspective now, because obviously that Apple deal, arguably I could have got $10,000 for it. Like, do you know what I'm saying? So I know a friend who made $40,000 tax free for 3 minutes worth of music with Apple. So the perspective just continued to change. But yeah, there definitely is money to be made, but there also is people trying to give you the least amount of money possible for your work and your creativity.
You always gotta know your value. Yeah. So important.
Yeah.
What are you willing to sell your time for?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Gotta know your stuff. Okay. Not be afraid. Okay. That's cool. Don't be afraid to speak up. Oftentimes you can see the opportunity and think, oh, but you know, they'll just ask someone else. But you gotta remember, they asked you for a reason. If they wanna go somewhere else, own that. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, allow them to get a cheaper deal, then, if that's the case, that's what they want to do, you know? I'm learning that. I have to learn not be afraid. Because when you're hungry, or when you need to pay your rent and you ain't got it, they're not around. So make sure you capitalize off what...
Yesterday's price is not today's price.
It's
that's
true.
The phrase that everyone's using, right?
What I'd seen something yesterday, when you're paying for a job that takes me 30 minutes to do, You're paying for my 30 hours of experience, or, you know, 30 years of experience. So it's not, you're actually paying for the time, you're paying for my experience. And that's that, also another thing. All the time and energy I'm putting to perfect my craft, you're paying for that quality, not how long it takes me to do it, or for how long you're booking me for. So, yeah.
So I guess that kind of answers my second question, which would be, for aspiring artists, what would be the one thing you would say that is a quality they need to hone? Would it be the hard work and perfecting their craft?
That's a part of it, but that also...
What would be the one thing?
Yeah, because hard work or being excellent at your craft is a bare minimum. Because, you know, in the industry, everyone's good. Everyone's talented. You know, that's why you're a professional. I would say what sets you apart. I think, truthfully, this is one thing that I would say. I have manifested so much. Like, even to the point we mentioned Thundercat. I've met him and I've connected with him and we've exchanged numbers. And that's someone that has influenced me so much. You know what I'm saying? And I've manifested my career to the point where I'm, you know, doing what I literally put on my wall. One of my mentors, Mark Collenberg, who I wanted to be my mentor, I put on my wall. We now have emails and we talk back and forward, and he's now a mentor. I've manifested so much. Like, I manifested touring and, you know, doing what I'm doing. And I would say be careful what you wish for, because you can get it. You know, there's nothing stopping you. The only thing that's stopping you is you. When you start to realize how much you are in control of your life and how much power you have to achieve anything, it then it's now become of like, what do you actually want and why do you want it? Because you're going to get it. And when you get it, are you going to know what to do with it? Or you might find that it's not actually what you want. It may not fulfill you. So more so getting away from like what it takes, but just more so like making people realize that you can actually do anything you want to do. Like, literally, it's so true. And once you really get to understanding that, it's just like, be careful what you wish for. Because if you want to be in the industry, it comes with challenges. You don't always get to be with your family. You don't always get money on time. You're always chasing down invoices. Do you know what I'm saying? Like there is benefits to it, but at the same time, there's uncertainties. So it's like, what do you really
want? So have some resilience.
Yeah, resilience. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess I got the final question.
Setting very clear goals. That's what I got from that. Setting, defining and understanding your
goals.
And
being resilient to get it. Okay. We can match there.
That's a two-part.
So the final question I have for you is, where can people hear your music from? Where can people know about your masterclasses? I mean, you're not on social media. We normally say, give your information on your social medias, but how can people listen to your music?
It's unreleased right now, but I've got a website, emmanueljburton.com. It's under construction, but it'll be on that eventually.
What about Sims?
Sims. You can find Little Sims. So yeah, YouTube is a good platform, to be fair. Just type in Little Sims. Live shows, you'll see me on there. You can check out the Venom 2 soundtrack. I'm on the drums on that.
Oh, whoa!
Yeah, that was a blessing to be a part of. And there's more coming soon. But like I said, this is definitely a two-parter. We definitely need to talk about more. Mo promised me a two-parter episode, so.
you got enough here for three. We started at 10.
It's crazy that it's 12:33.
Time flies, huh? Time flies.
Yeah. Definitely, I think it'll be dope to like hear your second leg of the tour, because obviously
when you come back from LA,
you did the UK. Yeah, you did UK. Obviously, COVID kind of, you know, made your plans change. But it'll be great to hear, you know, as your first world tour, like, your experiences, what you,
if you're going to Asia, can I come?
Yeah, be my bodyguard.
Don't say yeah, I'll be your bodyguard, I'll be the best bodyguard. You'll be like Whitney Houston out there, I'll carry you. It'll be Stuart Little carrying Lightning Dog.
I'm trying to be Bobby, bro. I'm trying to be Bobby. But yeah, no, definitely. It would be nice to catch back up. And then also as well, like, I'd like to delve into some topics, like, yeah. Because I'm sure there's a lot of topics. I know you guys, how you guys like to talk. I'd like to feature away from more called, like, the catch up. I'd like to.
This was just the introduction.
Yeah. I can't wait to do that part. I can't wait for that one.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, Okello here. This section is a space where we'll be sharing short stories, creative experiences, and art.
Yo, what's up? This is your boy Emmanuel J. Burton. This is an unreleased joint, exclusive from my brothers, Sage of the Three Paths. Let's go.
Calmness and stillness, it comes to an end. We hope you found some gems and go away richer in soul and spirit. We're showing you the three paths of the sage. Your path is your own. Which path do you follow? Until next time.